Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
97.1 FM Talk.
On demand audio.
Hey, how you doing? Happy Sunday night to you. Every Sunday night, 7 to 9 p.m. right here on 97.1 FM Talk, The Heidi Harris Show. Follow me, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Heidi Harris Show, Heidi Harris Show, Heidi Harris Show. All right, this last week was... I don't know if it was a total massacre, but it certainly wasn't as good as we thought it was going to be. We thought there would be a red wave, but we didn't quite get that. Yeah, there were a lot of people saying that. But here's the question, and I don't know the answer. That's why I'm going to have an expert on to tell you. Were the right people saying that we were going to have a red wave? Just because people say it on Twitter doesn't make it so. Right. So Zach Moyle is a pollster who's been a pollster for over two decades. This is what he does for a living, and he's excellent at it. And I wanted to have him join me tonight to kind of provide some perspective on what happened last week. How are you, Zach? Are you there?
Quorum at best.
Okay. Well, say that again. You weren't there for a second. Start again. What'd you say?
I'm pretty much here licking my wounds like a lot of the rest of you. You know, it's a difficult one. I'm here with my wife and kids, and I'm fine. I'm just disappointed. How about that?
That's how I feel about it. Now, so no, what do you think? Do you think it? Well, first of all, how off were the predictions? Because there were a lot of people saying things, and that doesn't mean those were accurate predictions. Maybe it was just wishful thinking. We don't really know. How far off were the results from what was predicted?
Well, let's get the first thing right, which is that Republicans, if we're just taking expectations out of it and, you know, who had the better night on election night, it's Republican. And so we don't want to forget that, you know, Republicans will essentially win more seats and, you know, overperform in general compared to Democrats. And we don't want to forget that first part. It's the second part, which is the expectations and also the historical norms by which Republicans will underperform. So when it comes to who had the better night, remove expectations. Let's not forget that Republicans won seats and did well in just kind of a normal sense. But it's when we take those expectations that we're going to line them up against each other and say, hey, you know, if I'm a Democrat, I'm feeling pretty good about what happened Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we expected a massacre. Speaking with Zach Moyle, we expected a massacre on the side of the Democrats. I mean, I couldn't believe, and once again, it's just my perception, and that's why I wanted you to come on, Zach, as the expert, because I'm so emotional about it. I'm looking at what they did to us for the last 2 years, the shutdowns, the keeping kids out of school. You got kids yourself. You understand how hard that was for everybody. And I was looking at that, and I'm thinking, to a large extent, in a lot of states, we voted to go back to servitude or not to teach these people a lesson. That's how I saw it.
Right. And you got to remember, when we look at kind of history, the reality is we had something happen in history that hasn't happened prior when it comes to COVID and how it was handled. And so there's the how it was handled and there's the how far removed. And if we look back and we look at Bush performing when it was September 11th or other historical events, you'll see that what voters generally do is they'll give those people a pass. You know, they'll say, well, this was a extreme event and where are we in time? Now, while you're going through it, nobody likes it. They're frustrated, they don't. But to a degree, it always gets to a point where you say, how far removed from those decisions are we? The second part of it is at a state level and a federal level. It's really difficult if we want to look at it and we combine those things. But people view state government differently than they do the federal government. They're not going to blame a senator for the shutdown. They'll blame a governor. And when you look at some of the Republican wins when it comes to governors, you'll see the difference between constituents who are happy and those who weren't. You know, you have Brian Kemp win by a substantial, you know, margin in Georgia, but that Senate seat, it's going to a runoff and you're running behind. That's the difference of two candidates. It's the difference of perception. And it's the difference of how people view those two types of government. In Nevada, same thing. You have Laxalt as a senator losing. You have Lombardo winning when you look at Nevada. And that's another example where, why are Republicans winning one and losing the other? And there's different rationale for that, part of which is how people view federal government versus state government. Part of it is the candidate. Largely, people did decide, hey, I think candidate X is better than candidate Y. You have lots of factors like that. The reality is, regardless of performance, Republicans had probably the best table setting that they have had in decades. They should have done better by any metric you want to look at. They underperformed by any expectation that was there. And this is the equivalent of, if you want to use a sports metaphor, you know, the other side doesn't have their starting quarterback, and you're coming in as the favorite. And, you know, how do you lose? And you shouldn't. So we still have lots of those issues you can break down and get into. The reality is, it wasn't a great night for Republicans based on expectations and based on how they performed. They should have performed better. And it's incredibly disappointing.
Yeah, we're speaking with Zach Moyle. He's been a pollster for over two decades. And I don't want to spend all the time on Nevada, but that's where you're based. And I know you do national things, but I do want to talk about that for a second, because of all the candidates they've had in Nevada for a very long time. Laxalt and April Becker were two of the best, and, you know, funded and everything else, and you know, good candidates, and yet they lost. And I'm thinking, as a Republican, oh my gosh, if candidates, you know, they always say bad candidates. These were good candidates. They still lost, not by much, but they still lost. And so what's the hope for Republicans going forward in situations like that?
Well, you know, the hope is exactly what it is. You know, I mean, if you're a Republican in Nevada, you took over the governor. You know, you were underfunded compared to the sitting governor, and you basically took them out. And you can look at that, and you can look at it as a win. When you look at the other side of that, you have to ask, why did we lose? But you're going to see several states. There's really four states where we have a governor on the ballot. And why don't all four of those states essentially go exactly the same way? And so that's part of it. I mean, the easy answer to all these questions is that Republicans, the one thing that they did is they doubled down and they pointed out how terrible Democrats were. And there was $9 billion, $9 billion in the United States sent this cycle in political ads. Almost every single ad you saw from Republicans was talking about how bad Democrats were. The problem with that's really simple. You don't need to know that. You can go to your gas station, and when you fill up your gas, and you know it's more expensive. You can go to the store and you can shop, and you know it's more expensive. You also know who the president is, and you know who's in control. Republicans can remind people of that all they want. The reality is, people largely know that. They can see that. This is one of those election cycles where I don't really have to tell people the story. They can see it. What voters are really asking is, okay, what's your plan? What are you going to do differently? How are you going to differentiate yourself? And they just didn't get that from Republican candidates. All they got this entire cycle was Biden's terrible, Pelosi. I mean, how many years do we have to watch Republicans running ads about Nancy Pelosi when she's not on the ballot? And we continue to do that. And so, you know, in states like, you know, Georgia, where Governor Kemp rolls out a plan, or Lombardo rolls out, you know, a plan and says, this is where I'm going to start, and voters can kind of see some of those different things. That's really what you look to as the roadmap for what was the difference. And really what Republicans needed was Mitch McConnell to come out and have a really good plan and say, folks, this is what we're going to do differently, and this is what it's going to look like, instead of, you know, billions of dollars on ads talking about how terrible they are and you don't want Nancy Pelosi. Voters know that. They still want a reason to vote for someone. They don't just want to vote against someone. They want a reason to vote for. And from a polling perspective, it's just cut and dry, black and white. When you look at these lines, Democrats were 100% united. They voted for their ticket. They went to the polls and they did what they were going to do. Republicans did not do the same. And that's the reason. I mean, at the end of the day, Democrats are more united than Republicans are. And that was the difference. And that's why you saw those abortion ads and guns and all those things. They reminded their base what was at stake and what was most important, like it or not. And they motivated their base enough to get to the polls. And they did what really a lot of us didn't think they would be able to do. On the Republican side, they used the disunity between Trump and a lot of these candidates and the party in general to their advantage, and it worked.
That's true. We're speaking with Zach Moyle. He's a pollster, has been for 20 years. When you mentioned the Democrats and the fact that they tend to vote Democrat, I've talked to more people over the last week who say, listen, I know folks who are Democrat. That's it. They're voting Democrat. They're never going to change their mind ever. That's it. Are Democrats less likely to ever change than Republicans? Because often Republicans become independent. And in Nevada, and I know I'm not just talking about Nevada tonight, but it's important because all eyes were on Nevada for a second there with the Laxalt and Cortez Masto race. I saw that last number I saw 11,000 people voted none of the above. So, I mean, that's really helpful, folks. I mean, that could have made the difference for Laxalt, obviously. But talk to me about the intractability of Democrat voters versus Republicans. Who's more intractable? Sounds like you're saying it's a Democrats.
Well, what I'm saying is who's more motivated. And at the end of the day, Democrats are more motivated because Democrats reminded them what was at stake in their minds. Now, the second part of that is Republicans did not have a good response, and they didn't talk about the response. They did not remind voters the opposite of that. So let's take abortion. How many states in the country is abortion illegal in? And the answer is zero. You know, it is a difference between how many weeks, right? Anywhere from 14 to 40 weeks. If we look at the issue of abortion, which is fascinating, you'll find that more voters agree on this issue than don't. Here's the two ways you know that. 90% of voters say that abortion should have some kind of an exception, meaning for rape, incest, or life of the mother. At the same time, 90% of voters, 90%, also say that they do not think that abortion should be legal in the third trimester. So how is it that we could be 90% on essentially what is a pro-life issue and 90% on essentially what is a pro-choice issue? The reality is voters are arguing over the number of weeks. They're not, you know, arguing over the legality of it. They're arguing over what the definition is, but they're not arguing over those things. You know, Republicans at any point could have jumped in and reminded voters of these things. They didn't. Instead, they went back to what we call the kitchen table issues, which work better in some states than other states. Those Democrat voters awaited a response from Republicans, and they never got it. And that's evident if you go to the Real Clear Politics average or you look at these polls. You referenced it earlier. You weren't seeing any of these polls show these Democrats at 49, 50, you know, 51. Most of these polls showed Democrats, you know, candidates at 44, 45. Now, why is that relevant? It means that there were still 3, 4, 5% of voters sitting there at the last minute going, somebody give me something. Give me a reason. Give me a reason to go the other way. And when you look at the Republican polls and you look at all of these target Senate seats, the average poll was off for Democrats by 3%. The average poll for Republicans was off by less than 1%. Now, why is that important? It means that essentially all of these pollsters had the Republican number accurately. They may have been off by a point, you know, maybe in front, but essentially most pollsters had these Republican numbers almost exact. What they didn't have was the Democrat number, and in some cases where they were off 4 or 5 points or more. So the reality is you had the whole numbers, and if you were off that much by Democrats, what does that tell you? And it tells you that those people that were sitting around there, all those undecided people you see in polls, at the end of this, they went Democrat. And there's two reasons for that. One, they never got the response from Republicans they were looking for. And two, if you're this late in the game, the bottom line is I'm sitting here in Nevada where the price of gas over the past 2 months has gone down. So, you know, inflation, gas, and those things, which were really on these people's minds months ago, they are now seeing it go in the direction they want. So it all boils down to Republicans have to have a better answer. They need something to give these voters, and they just didn't give it to them.
I'm speaking with Zach Moyle, a professional pollster. It's interesting, too, when they talk about abortion, they keep running ads in Nevada trying to get, you know, obviously the man who was running for governor, who's a governor-elect, was a sheriff at the time. But they were running ads trying to accuse him of making abortion illegal, which is, you know, that's a voter decision. That's not going to come down to the governor. And I never saw a response. Now, luckily, he won, but I never saw a response. And maybe that's something Republicans should have been better on and said, look, most of these states is going to be up to the voters, not a particular politician, as to whether or not abortion is legal.
Right. And, you know, to your response to that, you know, in Nevada, they ran those ads. Republicans ran them all over the country. They didn't run enough of them. When we look at the number one ad type that Democrats and Republicans spent on, those are two different. So Democrats, the number one thing they spent in terms of ads this cycle was on abortion. It was the number one issue they ran ads on. But Republicans, they barely addressed it. The number one ad was the economy, like it always is. You know, the addressing it just simply wasn't there. And when they addressed it, it was things like the Democrats are lying to you and they're evil and they're mean. And all, instead of just going straight for what it was. And, you know, we just didn't see that play out. Now, you know, we knew what the economy was. It's always the number one issue on voters' minds. It was this cycle. However, that's what Democrats did. They had a plan from day one. They executed it well. They never got off of it. And they motivated their base to go to the polls believing that these things were at stake, whether or not they were. Republicans never jumped in. They spent millions of dollars reminding people how bad the economy was, which they already knew, instead of telling people, listen, you're not being told the truth, and here's the reality. And so it's tough for voters to kind of go the other way when they don't really know the facts or the whole truth.
All right, that makes sense. And one more question, then we'll take a break, and we come back. If you can stick around, I want to ask you what we need to do better next time. Okay, but before we go, do you think things would have been different had there not been a Supreme Court decision on abortion right before the election or this last year? Do you think that would have made any difference?
I think it would have made a huge difference. You know, it gave Democrats the lifeline they needed. It put everything at stake, and it completely changed the dynamic and where they went. I mean, without that decision, they just really wouldn't have had a leg to stand on. I mean, that was a absolute lightning rod uniter for Democrats, and it was one that transformed this election. And I don't think you'll find a Democrat anywhere who won't basically reinforce that point. The only thing that I will explain again is Democrats are more unified than Republicans. If we go back to 2016, AOC, Bernie, they were mad at Hillary. They stayed out. They said, don't even vote for him. Trump wins the election. 2020, completely united, no infighting, everything wraps up early. They're 100% behind Biden. Biden wins. This time around, same thing. You had Bernie Sanders, you had AOC. These people were 100% united out there. You did not have any kind of Democrat split whatsoever. And then you hand them the abortion thing, which they all agree on. I mean, come on. You know, the table was set very well for Republicans, and we ended up giving Democrats every single thing that they needed to execute the strategy that they did.
Yeah, that's a problem. Zach Moyle's with me. He's a pollster, has been for over two decades. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about what Republicans need to do the next time, because we've got 2024. There's already talk about DeSantis. Trump's taking pot shots at him. Trump's expected to announce this week. Is Trump still a factor? All of that coming up next with my friend Zach Moyle, professional pollster. I'm Heidi Harris. This is 97.1 FM Talk. How you doing? Every Sunday night, 7 to 9 right here on 97.1 FM Talk, the Heidi Harris Show. I am joined by a pollster friend of mine I've known for a long time. He's been a pollster, professional pollster, does it for campaigns all over the country for over 20 years. His name is Zach Moyle, and you can look him up at thepollingprofessor.com. Zach, you know, there are people who will say fraud, all this stuff. I don't doubt that there has been fraud. There always will be a certain amount of fraud, because there has been always in every election since, 1790, our first one. There's always going to be election fraud. But what would the percentage be if there were election fraud? How much could they possibly get away with if they did?
Well, the difference between voter fraud and widespread coordinated voter fraud is really important to consider. And the really interesting thing, again, about this cycle is we have states where, you know, Democrats are winning the Senate and then the Republican wins the governor. So it's really difficult to make the case for fraud this cycle, just based on the patterns were so random and so split. So if there was, you know, a widespread case of voter fraud, you know, against Adam Laxalt, then, you know, how did Joe Lombardo win? You know, why is the number between Lake and Masters so different in Arizona? And we could go through the list. So I just don't think you're going to see a lot of that coming up this cycle compared to other ones, because again, the vote was so different in so many of these states. And if you're in a state like Georgia, where there was, you know, just all kinds of claims last time around, you had a Republican governor win by 13 points. So it's tough to make that claim this cycle. And I really expect it to be less than it has in previous cycles. You know, where voter fraud affects the most is in local races. You know, we have a case here, right, in Clark County in 2020, where we had a race that was decided by less than 100 votes for a county commission seat. And the Clark County registrar came out and said, listen, I don't know who won this race because I can't determine these last 100 votes because of the way that they were cast. But the way the law is written is that the county commission itself is the one that certifies the election results. And so six Democrat county commissioners got to certify this race for the Democrat, even though the registrar himself said, listen, I don't know who won this race.
Yeah, that was
based
terrible.
On the way
that
these votes
terrible.
Are. And so where fraud affects races is very different from the fact that fraud happens. The bottom line is every state in America in every single election convicts at least one case of voter fraud. And so we see this convicted year after year after year after year. The victims of it are usually those in a lot smaller races.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about this idea that the Democrats would be willing to sacrifice, in the case of Nevada, they would sacrifice the governor just because, you know, they were more concerned about the Senate seat and they want to kind of throw everybody off? What about, I've heard people say that.
I mean, you can say, I just always ask the question, how do you even do that? I mean, it is so complicated to do. And again, anyone that is able to do it is, you know, considerably smarter than myself. I mean, you know, the numbers and the things, and all I'm going to go back to again is most of these polls that we look at had those Republican numbers exactly the same. You know, the Democrat number was off, but that's also the number of undecided voters in a lot of these cases. You know, I just look at math, and when I look at math and things line up, I just have to widely assume, well, you know, if they were going to coordinate and steal this vote, then they also had to fool a lot of pollsters for 6 months on end, because those are the same things that we were seeing. And I don't want to discount fraud because it happens, and I don't want to discount fraud because it's a problem. It's just, you know, widespread coordinated voter fraud is very difficult. The much bigger issue, as you and I have talked about, is, you know, legalized forms of voter intimidation, you know, legalized things like ballot harvesting. In Nevada, Republicans voted for the bill that allowed ballot harvesting to be legal. It's ridiculous. I mean, we have so many forms of legal ways that people can affect the vote. I just don't think Democrats need illegal forms, considering all of the different things that we've made legal that shouldn't be legal.
That's so true. Now, speaking of going forward, we're speaking with Zach Moyle, professional pollster. Going forward, what do the Republicans need to do nationwide as far as honing their message? You know, some people say we need better candidates. Other people say, well, we can't get good candidates, or if we do, we don't give them the support. People want to blame Mitch McConnell. They want to blame all kinds of people. A lot of finger pointing, obviously. What do you think the Republicans need to do going forward? Because 2024 is coming quickly. We don't know if it's going to be DeSantis or not, or Trump, or who knows. But what would your advice be?
Well, I mean, the easiest way I can probably explain it would be to say that the last time we balanced the federal budget was 1997. The person that did that was John Kasich. Republicans don't like John Kasich. They say that he's not conservative enough. And the last person to roll out a plan for America or something really from the House that was something you could bite your teeth in was Paul Ryan, who effectively Republicans voted out and wanted to get rid of. You know, it's fine to have conservatives and be as conservative as we can. We just need a plan, and we need something that we can put before people. The last popular president, people hated Hillary Clinton. You know, Trump is divisive, but say what you will, people still love President Obama. He's looked to as a uniter, whether you like that or not. You know, where is the Republican plan? Where is the Republican contract with America, like, you know, Newt Gingrich had or something to that effect, that shows Americans that we have something to give to the American people? Really, what people want at the end of the day is just someone that is, you know, likable. That's one of the reasons Obama won, not on any policy, but because he was likable. He was on all the talk shows. He's on ESPN. He's, you know, he was a hard guy not to like. And so we have to have a different vehicle. And you know, I'll just say that if Republicans want Mitch McConnell to be the leader again, I just don't think that's a very good face for the party. You know, we're coming off an underperformance. We haven't looked good lately, and we're finding the oldest, richest white person we can to represent the party. It's not a good look. In the meanwhile, you have, you know, younger people that conservatives don't like Ben Sasse going, you know, forget about this. I'll go be the president of, you know, the University of Florida because Republicans don't like me, even though I have the fifth, that's number five, the fifth most conservative voting record in the entire United States Senate. And we don't want Ben Sasse in our party, apparently, even though he's number five, most mm-hmm. conservative. And so he's out, he's on his way to Florida, but we have all these other people that just, you know, it is what it is. We need a different face. We need a different plan, but mostly we need unity. We are not a unified party whatsoever. That was shown in the primary and in the general elections. And we cannot have this cannibalization, because that's exactly how Trump got elected in the first place, was Democrats were cannibalized. They were infighting. They didn't like each other. That's how Trump got elected. Now that they've been unified, we have not had a successful election for Republicans since. Where's the unity? Who's the right face of the party? How are we going to come together and agree on things? And what's the plan?
Right. Well, we're speaking with Zach Moyle, professional pollster. You know, there's a lot of consternation about Ron DeSantis is a globalist, or this one's a globalist, or that one's a globalist, and Trump isn't, you know, part of the in circle, so to speak. But it's the same with the Democrats. What do we see? The same people on stage every time. Hillary, Bernie. I mean, give me a break. Bunch of old white people on that side too. But to your point, they seem to be more unified, at least now, than they used to be. But both parties.
Yeah, but they're unified with younger people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, the unity is coming from people like AOC and the Squad, or whatever you want to call it. They have these younger, more diverse faces of the party who have different elements, which allow Pelosi to operate in the way that she does. You have different presentations there that go well. And any of the Democrat in fighting, you know, it's not like Pelosi and AOC like each other. They're two vastly different individuals. And behind the scenes, they don't agree on much. But we don't see that being drawn out into the public,
like
it is between President Trump and Ben Sasse, or even, you know, President Trump and John McCain last cycle. Like, why do we think we should be winning Arizona when the president comes out and talks about so poorly about one of the people that they beloved the most? You know, where is the unity in terms of just being on the same page? And we already have this. We already have Trump out banging on DeSantis, who just won a race by 20 points somehow. So yeah. Why don't we look to Florida and start asking, hey, what are they doing in Florida so well? Because when DeSantis and Rubio win both of their races by over double digits, something's going on down there that works pretty darn well. Why do we have our former president attacking that? It's ridiculous.
It shouldn't happen. So what do you think? And Trump's probably going to announce this week. What are you seeing? Do you think DeSantis will jump in? Do you think he sits back and waits? He's pretty young. He's got a lot of time to do that. Who knows what the big donors are telling him in those smoky paneled rooms? What do you think, Zach?
Well, let's be clear. I mean, the chances of Donald Trump winning, you know, presidential election are very slim. I mean, they're just not there. I mean, in the same way that voters don't like Joe Biden and rejected Hillary Clinton, this is not unique. Voters are begging for something or anything new. That's the reality of the situation. So what will Republicans do? I mean, the bottom line is pull any old president out of, you know, the back room. Voters are not going to like that. And in fact, when we look at these losses, what's really interesting for Republicans in some of these seats, especially the House ones, you know, almost half of these candidates that lost this year that had opportunities are candidates, they're reruns. They're candidates, voters already, you know, didn't vote for them multiple times before. Why are we doing the same thing over and over again? Listen, if you believe Trump was a good president, that's awesome. It's wonderful. And here's the policies and those things. That doesn't mean we want him again. It doesn't mean the American public's going to put up with it. Hillary Clinton was the least popular nominee in the history of the presidency. Yes, voters voted Trump, but more so they rejected Hillary Clinton.
Yes,
she
absolutely
got the lowest numbers for a Democrat nominee in years. Republicans, Democrats, they want something different. And when are we going to get that? The Republicans need to get in line and do the same thing.
I totally agree. Zach Boyle, pollster. People can look you up your website, The Polling Professor, where you are you at my request, I think you started a little tiny website, right? I know that's not your main.
You told me
function.
I had to, like usual. I got to do what you tell me to do.
I do what you tell me to do. Maybe buy a new computer this year. You tell me to do it, I do it. I listen to you. What can I tell you? All right, listen, my friend.
Folks,
great
my
talking.
My greatest accomplishment in life was getting Heidi to buy a new computer that actually functioned, one that was a decade old. Let's just get that out on the air now.
Just because I was using a 13-year-old desktop. Don't let that bother you. Yeah, I know. I was cheap on the wrong things. All right, Zach Moyle, my friend, thank you for your analysis. It's excellent. Appreciate it.
See you, Heidi.
Thanks. Always fun to talk to him. Yeah, when you look at the thing with Ron DeSantis and Trump, I mean, I voted for Trump twice. I reject the idea that if I'm a conservative, I got to go with Trump. That's not true of anybody. You know, Trump is not the person who started conservatism, and he wasn't even a Republican for many years. He didn't start conservatism, and I am tired of this idea that that's the barometer. If you support Trump, you're a conservative. If you don't, you're a globalist, you're this, you're that, you're the other. I'm thinking long game, and a person like Ron DeSantis could potentially get in there for 8 years. That's what we need, because Trump's not going to do 8 years, even if he did get back in there. And like I said, I supported him twice. But I don't know what the party's going to do. By this week, of course, by next Sunday, the next time you hear from me, we will know what Trump's going to do. But, you know, politicians are a different breed of cat. Can we all agree on that? I've seen crazy things happen with politicians. And most of them, you know, they have these, you know, desires and they have ambitions that sometimes people around them will go, I don't think it's a great idea, but they don't really want to listen. They have certain things they want to do. In Trump's case, he's got, you know, obviously revenge is on his mind. And there are a lot of people I know who still support him. I feel like you got shafted in 2020. Absolutely, I feel like you got shafted in 2020. I feel like the whole country got shafted in 2020. And we wouldn't be in the situation we're in right now if Trump were still president. I do believe that 100%. But going forward, is this the right thing to do? I can't imagine. And more people now are saying, nah, he's not our guy. And it's interesting how I saw a story today about people were saying, well, you should be suspicious because the media is, the mainstream media is really, they really like Ron DeSantis. Well, they like Trump too, remember? They followed him around with cameras. They gave him, $2 billion worth of coverage during the campaign. They wanted him to be the nominee because they thought they could destroy him. So the fact that the media is slobbering all over anybody doesn't mean they really like that person. I think y'all know that, right? I think you do. All right. I'm Heidi Harris. Coming up, much more to get to this evening. Don't forget, every Sunday night, 7 to 9, right here on 97.1 FM Talk. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Heidi Harris Show, Heidi Harris Show, Heidi Harris Show. Coming right back.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.